This is More Financial Talk with Ryan Moore from Retirement Solutions Group. You need a financial strategy that accounts for challenges like market volatility and inflation, and that also adequately prepares you for retirement. The purpose of More Financial Talk is to address common financial concerns, provide helpful strategies, and offer ways you may be able to achieve your financial goals. And now here's More Financial Talk. Keep more in your pocket.
Welcome to More Financial Talk. I'm Ryan Moore, and with me today is co-host Tony Shore. Tony, how's it going?
Well, as you can see, I am fantastic today because, Ryan, you have a huge get. I don't know how you have this pull, but we have one of the top portfolio managers from Gradient Investments on the show, and she's right here with me. We'll introduce her in a minute, but I've had a great week. Last week, I spent some time with my dad and mom and the family, so that was great. How about you, Ryan? How are you doing?
Yeah, doing wonderful. Just getting back in the swing of things. We enjoyed a lovely conference / vacation with our investment group Gradient, financial group down in Mexico. So took the whole family down for that. Sat through a few meetings, but ultimately got some nice fun in the sun with the kiddos and the misses, and pampered a little bit, and got to connect with our guest while we were down there as well. So coming back to reality, of course, but I feel recharged, so raring and ready.
All right. Well, Ryan, introduce to our listeners and viewers out there our very special guest who was also at that financial getaway in Mexico.
Unfortunately, Ryan has much more tan than I do, so I didn't get quite the sun exposure, it seems, here on the screen.
I did wear sunscreen. I think I get this complexion from my dad when I get a little bit of sun, so it's that time of year. So. Nice. Anyway, well, we are super excited to have CFA portfolio manager Lisa Schreiber with us today, who's been with Gradient as one of the portfolio managers that we are, super excited to join us and appreciate her expertise and what she does, for Gradient, which ultimately trickles down to our firm and our clients. So Lisa, welcome in.
Thank you for having me. Well, I'm starting to blush with all of these kind words from you guys.
Well, every day you're actively managing these accounts, a lot of them that Ryan's clients are in. Mm-hmm. And it's great for the listeners and viewers to be able to see in person the behind the scenes people who are actually actively making sure these accounts are doing the best they can, stay diversified. I think that's fantastic. Ryan, I think it's great you work with Gradient Investments and have the pull to get Lisa on the show today.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we couldn't do it without our strategic partners, and there's a lot of depth to what support we get from the Gradient team, and Lisa's a big part of that. So, but let's, why don't we touch on one of the obvious here, which is Lisa's lovely accent, and maybe that will be our segue into a little bit of her background, where she comes from, and what led her to the business.
Yeah, so I am originally, so I sound a little bit like Arnold Schwarzenegger. I'm working on my accent, though. I'm originally from Austria. I moved to the U.S. With my husband 4 years ago. I'm working for Gradient for about 3.5 years. And back in Austria, I worked in finance already, but I was more on your side of the aisle, Ryan. I was an advisor for high net worth clients for insurance and investments. And I wanted to switch things up a little bit. I wanted to do more on the research and management side, but still have exposure to clients and not be just tucked away behind the screen. And I think, it's great to be here and to do both. And every once in a while get invited to a podcast or to client events and kind of see our advisors in action, like you, Ryan, and your clients. And that's very special to me. So I have the best of both worlds, I always say.
Yeah.
That's tremendous. And I know you have the coveted CFA designation, which is, kind of the gold standard for portfolio management. So with that comes a lot of study time to get that, those tests passed to get that designation. So maybe you talk a little bit about what it is to be a CFA for Gradient and how important that designation is.
Well, Ryan, you give me a lot of credit here. I have to say, though, I'm still on the journey. So I'm still studying for the last test, and then I will have my designation. So
gotcha.
Still have all my international licenses, finance, investment licenses, and I'm working on the CFA right now. So,
well, I might have jumped the gun there, but I got full faith and confidence in you. So to bring that on home, but
I will not disappoint. It should be done by beginning of next year.
Oh, that's great. Well, and you already have a lot of designations, mm-hmm. like you said, and licensure. So, and you've been doing this a long time. So you just have that final test left.
Exactly.
That's awesome. Exactly. Awesome. Well, we'll throw a big party for you when you get that.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have a CFA in our office. And when he brings it up, he says it took him about 5,000 hours of study time.
Yeah.
Or I should say maybe 5 years and 3,000 hours. But needless to say, it was kind of mind blowing what goes into all of that, and what that entails. So. Mm-hmm.
But you're almost there.
I'm almost there. That's finish line.
Fantastic.
Great. Well, I think the focus today was really, as we're at the midway point of the markets, was just to get mm-hmm. a little bit of an outlook here from, you know, those that are behind the scenes that are analyzing and, you know, dissecting the markets. And it's been an interesting year thus far, like most, a little bit of up and down, but I know we're in the positive. So how are you feeling about the markets going forward? Lisa, we bullish, we bearish?
So I'm more optimistic, bullish, I would say. We had a great half year so far. I mean, S&P is up 9% as of today. Sounds really good on the surface, right? But when we dive a little bit deeper, as you said, it was an interesting year already. We had some volatility. We had some chitters here and there. There was a lot going on, but markets are positive. And I think we can expect a positive year overall. So I'm very optimistic. With that being said, though, there is a couple of things that are probably give us some chitters here and there that we saw, for example, yesterday in the markets, right? We had a little sell-off in semi stocks, for example, in tech. But nevertheless, overall, still very positive. There's a lot of great tailwinds going on, right? We talked a lot about that in the beginning of the year, the broadening out, for example, where not only tech is performing well, but also other areas of the market are starting to chime in. International markets are being better now. Small caps, for example, right? I mean, that was not happening for the last 10 to 15 years. It was only U.S. exceptionalism and basically tech for the last couple of years.
Yeah.
So having a little bit broadening out there, what we see and continue to see, that is certainly sets us up for balanced portfolio returns and is obviously a great opportunity. With a couple of the chitters that I mentioned, I mean, one obvious one, and we probably go a little bit deeper into that if you want, Ryan, is the conflict that's still going on in Iran since end of February. Obviously, that is not resolved yet, but I think we are in the finishing stretch of having a deal there soon, which would be great again for oil. Thinking of the Strait of Hormuz, oil disruptions in the world, what that means. I mean, prices in oil spike. That leads into higher inflation, what we saw, and that obviously strains consumer pocketbooks, more the lower income consumer, more than the higher income consumer. But that has all implications for companies, their margins, how are they doing their supply chains, and for the economy. So that's one part. What we think, again, we are in the finishing stretches of that, and that should calm down as well. And then at the end of the year or later this year, we have something coming up, midterm elections.
Oh, boy.
And that usually leads to a little bit more volatility in the month leading up to it. So we have a couple more topics left and a couple of more concerns, but there's always concerns every single year. But overall, the economy is strong and resilient. Corporate America is roaring, growing their earnings companies at a pace not seen in years. So I think that is very important, a great tailwind. And that is what ultimately drives markets, the economy and earnings growth. And we are very excited about that. And there's a lot of great opportunities ahead.
Yeah, so you just covered a lot of ground there. So let me retort on a little bit of this. But I do think that, you know, when you look at the earnings outlook of what we just came off of, with a lot of the big S&P companies reporting, were much better than expected. And that tends to drive stock prices higher. And what I found interesting was all of that was being reported while we were in the, you know, in the middle really of this Iran conflict, when oil had already spiked. So sounds to me like the markets had baked some of that in, which, you know, I think is a good tailwind, like you indicated. Also, you know, because of the spike in oil, which trickles down to, you know, products and how it impacts consumers. You know, when we started the year, I think there was a high expectation for some additional rate cuts. But as a result of, you know, some of these developments, it's now odds on that we might actually get a rate increase. And how would you expect that to affect the markets?
Yeah, you summarized it very well. We came into the year with around 2 to 3 rate cut expectations for the full year. Then we saw the Iran conflict broke out, and in very short amount of time, that completely flipped to either pause of the Fed or even rate hikes. So the consensus now is for up to 3 hikes, which we don't think that we will get there, but at least we think we will have a pause. Mm-hmm. Seeing how inflation is doing and how oil prices feed into that, and not only oil price itself when it comes to energy, but also it feeds into every single product. So that obviously needs to be brought back into check. And that obviously can be done with rate hikes either, or at least a pause. I think overall how it affects the markets, I mean, rate hikes overall, that obviously put a little strain on the markets because it affects companies, right? And their funding and how they're taking out loans and how they're financing themselves, especially when we think of small caps stocks, for example, right? Which usually take on a little bit more debt to being able to grow, do not have sometimes that grade of credit ratings yet, are smaller, do not have that much leverage to get lower rates. That can be an indication there or a headwind there. And also for big companies, I mean, we see it with all of these AI spend and CapEx spend. I mean, just the hyperscalers, just the largest 7 companies in the U.S. are set to spend $700 billion of CapEx just on building out AI infrastructure. So that is an insane amount of money, and they need to finance that somehow, right? And we see that more and more financing through loans, through the bond markets, raising finance there. And that can have implications on that. And we saw some jitters in the market whenever interest rate expectation changes. And ultimately as well, and I think we will touch on that too, is precious metals, right? And we saw that in the gold price, for example, that these different rate cut expectations are certainly also our headwind for precious metals too.
Yeah, and you touched on midterm elections. So obviously policy change can impact markets as well. I know Gradient's always taken the stance that, you know, not to mix portfolios and politics. And when my time with Gradient spans over a decade now, and we've had some major, you know, elections through that period, and they've always taken the same position. And I appreciate them for that, because I think especially in the elevated world of politics these years, it can get emotions to run hot and high, and that can cause us to do things that maybe are not fundamentally sound as it relates to staying the course with our plan and with our money. So I do like their position on trying not to, you know, bring the political world into, you know, investment management. And I think you guys still hold true to, you know, staying strong with keeping those separate. So I do appreciate that. Now, we did touch on, or you did kind of prelude to precious metals. So I know that you manage the precious metals portfolio at Gradient. And, you know, that's an area that a lot of my clients have some exposure. I do think that it's not necessarily an asset class that you want to be overly exposed, but I do think it's good to have some in that arena. Many of my clients might have anywhere from 3 to 5% of their overall portfolio exposed to, you know, primarily gold. I know your portfolio that you manage isn't always just based on gold. There can be some other metals, but it is also actively managed. So some things can come in and out of that portfolio. But I'd like to drill down on that a bit more, since we have had a pullback with gold and also silver. So, you know, with that, with the pullback that we've had, and I, you know, checked out gold this morning trading at around 4,000 an ounce. And at one point it had peaked, I believe, at about 5,300 an ounce. You know, do you view this timing based on this pullback as a good dip buying opportunity?
Mm-hmm. So as you said, like, I managed to, so I'm the gold and silver girl here. And the precious metals can invest in all the precious metals, which are basically four: gold, silver, platinum, and palladium. Palladium and gold currently in the portfolio. Overall, I would say I'm still optimistic about gold specifically, which is the largest holding in the portfolio right now. Lately, over the last, since we had the conflict breakout end of February with Iran, I get a lot of questions like, why is gold down? Now we have the conflict. Gold is the ultimate safe haven. When geopolitical risk rises, gold is doing well. Why is it down when now we have the geopolitical conflict, right? So it seems a little bit counterintuitive, but there's multiple things that come together. Multiple things at once can be true. And for example, we had a lot of that ramp up in geopolitical uncertainty last year. That's why gold performed like over 60% last year, had its best year since 1979, which was fantastic.
Yeah.
So a lot of that was anticipation for that already. And then also, when we had the conflict start and spiking oil prices, which again influences inflation and pressures inflation up, and also influences the Fed decision on interest rates. Well, higher interest rates, or at least expectations for higher interest rates, is a headwind for gold. As gold doesn't pay us any interest, it just sits there. Obviously, there's more competition from assets that pay interest or higher interest when we have higher interest rates. So gold is a little bit less appealing. And that is obviously what happened there to one extent. And then we have another part here, which is a stronger US dollar. Right. The US dollar last year was pretty much weaker compared to other major currencies. That was a tailwind for gold. Now we have the reverse happening. And why is that? Because gold is denominated and traded in US dollars, which means, well, for international buyers or global buyers outside the US, it's getting a little bit more expensive to buy gold. So that's why stronger US dollar is also generally a headwind. So that all came together with the geopolitical uncertainty, and that was a little bit more, had more weight on that. Why I am still very much optimistic about gold, that it can do well over the next couple of months, over the next next foreseeable future, is, hey, we have strong demand for gold. We have central banks buying gold. They cannot get enough hands on gold left and right, because they wanted to diversify away from just the US dollar as a major reserve currency. And gold holdings as of now have actually outweighed US treasuries for the first time since 1996.
Wow.
So that is huge. Yep.
Yeah.
A huge part of that. And the interesting thing about central banks, and why I like that demand from that side so much, it's, first of all, they are less sensitive to prices. They just buy because they want to buy. They want to diversify. So they're less price sensitive. And also they don't sell. Right? They don't sell, they just keep it because it's a reserve. We had a little bit of central bank selling, which kind of was a discussion in the market over the last couple of weeks, as some central banks needed to sell some of their gold reserves because of higher oil prices. Mm-hmm. But again, that was a short dip and nothing structural or strategic. So we are back at spending there, which again, I like, because it keeps us a little bit of a price floor to the price of gold, because they're not selling. Then we have still a lot of retail investors, right, that are underexposed to gold and precious metals as a portfolio diversifier. As you said, Ryan, you like your clients have about a 5% allocation to precious metals, which we also think is a great portfolio diversifier. And still a lot of investors are not there yet. So gold can be overbought or oversold, but still underowned. So we still see strong demand from the retail side there. So overall, I'm pretty optimistic about gold still. That's why it's the largest holding at the moment. A little bit different story for silver, but I give you an opportunity to chime in before I rant on even more here.
Yeah. So, I like to read on this stuff. So I subscribe to a number of different analysts, and, you know, I do think historically there's a lot to consider here, because oil is traded with the, you know, on the, what they call the petrodollar in US dollars, you know, that was one thing that I did learn was an impact for part of the pullback, was some of these countries selling gold to essentially raise dollars to buy oil at higher prices. And that, you know, historically over the last 50 years, when there is an oil crisis, the metals, gold specifically, have pulled back. But I think also historically, once the oil crisis resolves, then the metals tend to come roaring back. And so, you know, I like to, you know, keep positive in that trend. If history does repeat itself, which we know that's not always going to be the case. Additionally, I even read something recently where it said, you know, precious metals bull markets tend to last a decade. And this particular bull run began in 2022, which would indicate we're in the early innings. So all that to be said, I still think that potentially we're at a dip buying opportunity here. But to segue into the silver side of things, because, you know, I own the portfolio myself. And when silver and gold were really running up, you know, a few months ago, I was kind of surprised to see all of a sudden the silver position in the portfolio was no longer there. And we talked about this, so we got a good chuckle out of it, because my thought was, wow, do they have a crystal ball? Because silver's running up so much, how do they know to sell it right now? And literally the very next day when I checked the price of silver, it had dropped about 30% in one day, and you guys sold it the day before the drop. So I, you know, stood corrected and realized that maybe you do have a working crystal ball over there. So great call on that one. That can
well, that's my secret, Tony.
Yeah, so that was an amazing timing on that. That being said, silver's come down quite a bit from the highs. And I guess my curiosity is, you know, are you eyeing that for a particular price point to maybe get back in? Because part of, I think, the bull case for silver is the increased industrial usage for, you know, solar, advanced military weaponry, you know, things of that nature, where it is a metal that is sought after, you know, not just as a store value, but demand for industrial purposes. And there's also, I guess, a decrease in supply and also some constraints in China for exporting silver, because I think they're trying to be mindful of the benefits of hoarding it themselves. So all of that to be said, you know, are you eyeing silver at a particular re-entry point, as it did hit $60 an ounce started today?
I still love silver for the long term. We sold it out because the price movements shortly before the drop were a little bit erratic, you know, and we knew, okay, that has nothing to do anymore with fundamentals. That's just momentum. And at some point it will snap. And yeah, it snapped the next day after we sold it. I still like it very much as a long-term play. Silver is a much smaller market than gold, which makes it more volatile. It also has, like you pointed to, different demand drivers. Gold is nearly 100% monetary demand, has the central bank backing to it, which makes it very attractive. Silver does not have the central bank demand to it, but it has an industrial demand. I think 60 to 70%, more 70% of silver is industrial, which makes it a little bit of the safe haven like gold is, but more important to look where silver is used. And a lot of that is used in solar panels, for example. And you mentioned China. China is the leader in producing solar panels. They snatch up every silver they can get their hands on because they need it for that. Then AI data center built out. We touched on the AI built out infrastructure and what companies are actually putting money on the ground to build out that that infrastructure. And silver is also used in that, also for strategic. Just the U.S. Added it to their critical minerals list end of last year, which can open it up to government intervention as well, which can be a tailwind to silver prices too. So there's a lot of positives there where I really like silver. The only thing is, though, and I think most of the momentum and most of the speculation has washed out by now, but we see silver a little bit more as a technical analysis, right? When we look at the chart there and then we see, okay, since it came down dramatically end of January, it has meandered around a lot. It made lower lows. So it's kind of not quite rebounded sustainably what I would like to see before going back in. So I would like to see a little bit more sustainable price momentum to really see prices going up. yeah, we might miss out on a first couple percent. But again, mm-hmm. I'm making sure that we are getting the entry point as perfectly timed as possible. And when it comes to the technicals, that hasn't happened yet. Again, like you said, once we have a resolve with Iran and have some supply issues that silver also had, physical silver supply is resolved and industrial demand expectations are back, then I believe we might come close to adding it back to the portfolio.
Excellent. Well, we know you guys don't operate haphazardly over there. So, and we put a lot of trust in, you know, your expertise in watching the fundamentals and the technicals. So we thank you for that. So I think at this point, you know, I think we covered a lot of ground, Lisa, and unless you had any lasting or parting thoughts here, we greatly appreciate your time today.
Thank you for having me on. Yeah, we covered a lot of ground. I told Tony, please stop me because I tend to rant on and do not stop, you know, and I know I have 20 minutes. I like to get as much information in as possible. But thank you so much, Ryan. It's great to be on your podcast and yeah, that your clients can listen to us today.
Absolutely. Well, we thank you for what you do.
Yeah, it's great. Lisa, you offered a lot of great information. I love when you talk about what indicators you look at to get in or out of something, and you're waiting for certain technical and indicators to know that it's real and not just a fluke. Somebody sneezed in China, so something went way up or way down. You're looking for hard indicators. That's awesome. You talked a lot about it. Ryan, we got to have Lisa back to talk about, where interest rates are going with the Fed and how that's going to affect the market. We didn't get time to get into that, but there's a lot more, and we'll have Lisa and others from GI on the show for our listeners out there again. And Ryan, you're always staying on top of this stuff and in constant communication with them. I think that's fantastic. So before we go, Ryan, let our listeners know if they have questions for you or Lisa or your team there, how can they get a hold of you?
Absolutely. So you could call our office direct at area code 615-467-6300. You can also email our office at info@rsgtn.com or just check out our website at rsgtn.com.
All right. Well, that sounds great, Ryan. And again, thank you to Lisa Schreiber from Gradient Investments, a portfolio manager there, and our host, the man with the plan, Ryan Moore. That does it for today's episode of More Financial Talk.
Thank you for joining us for More Financial Talk. Don't head into retirement without a strategy that addresses both income and taxes. For more information, please contact Ryan Moore at Retirement Solutions Group at 615-467-6300 or visit rsgtn.com. Join us again soon for another episode of More Financial Talk. Keep more in your pocket.
Advisory services are offered by Retirement Solutions Group, Inc., an investment advisor. Insurance products and services are offered independently through Ryan Moore and Greg McGee, sole proprietors. All matters discussed during the show are for informational purposes only. Each individual situation may vary, and the opinions expressed here may not apply to everyone. Materials presented are believed to be from reliable sources, and no representations can be made as to its accuracy. All ideas and information should be discussed in detail with one of our qualified representatives prior to implementation. We are not affiliated with or endorsed by the Social Security Administration, the Federal Medicare Program, or any other government agency. Calling this number will direct you to a licensed sales agent.